Today we are doing another episode of the Ask the Coaches podcast. So I will go over what the four questions are that we will be addressing in this episode, and then we will take a deep dive into the answers to the questions in a podcast format. If you ever have any questions for us, we'd love to answer them in a podcast format or even just through email. So if that's something you ever have questions about, you can email us at info@runforprs.co. So diving right in now. The first question is what to wear or prepare for running a race in the rain. So that's going to really vary. We'll talk about how to do that in, 38 degrees versus 70 degrees and all of the temps in between there, because it really does vary quite a bit when we're talking about those cooler temperatures. Often rain is actually ideal in some situations. Once the temperature is maybe above 50, it can really help keep things cool. Obviously, there are some downfalls with rain, such as chafing, heavier shoes, all of those things, but we'll talk about ways to prepare for that. Next is how to prepare for hot temperatures on race day. So this is always a tough one for athletes. I think the last couple of years, there have been hot races, especially in New York City and Chicago. And so that can be really tough when someone trains all summer in the hopes for a cool marathon, and then you end up getting like 70 plus degrees and humid and sunny. But there are definitely ways to prepare for hot temperatures on race day. There are ultra marathons. I think Badwater takes place in the desert in California, middle of the summer. And these ultra marathon athletes have to really prepare by doing some serious heat training in their build up to this event. Otherwise, they're kind of out of luck. And the whole idea of this race is doing it in the worst possible conditions. And so there are ways to prepare the body for a hot race. But we also want to look at the flip side of that. If you're someone that's like, I hate the heat, I don't ever want to race in it, well, we want to look at ideas like we need to sign up for races that don't have the potential to be hot, or coming up with a game plan for, okay, if it is hot, maybe we change what race we're going to do. And so I think there's two ways you can approach it. You can approach it as, okay, I'm going to prep for any situation. I'm going to prep for the heat, assume it's going to be hot. Or the second route is you can just assure that you're not going to race in the heat by finding a separate race. So we'll talk about those two options. Next, we're going to be talking about everyone's really popular favorite fitness class. That's really been the craze the last, 5 to 10 years now. How does Orange Theory fit into your running plan? Or something like the pros and cons of Orange Theory classes while training. This person just really wants to hear our take on Orange Theory and how to really fit it in when training for a larger event like a marathon or half marathon. So we're really going to take a deep dive into like what Orange Theory is and what your goals are, and really go at it from there. Because for some people, they don't have really aggressive running goals. Maybe their goal is just to finish an event. And my answer might be a little bit different for that individual versus an individual who's maybe hoping to qualify for Boston, really wants to reach their potential in the sport of running. We're going to talk about, does Orange Theory help you do that? And how would we approach your approach to Orange Theory? Next, a question that I get pretty frequently is, how do I run so many miles? We're just going to go over, how to build your mileage and really how training might look like for various people in various seasons of life, right? So you might follow someone on social media and wonder, like, how do they train so much? But there's a lot of things maybe you don't see behind the scenes, so maybe we'll expose some of those things. So number one, what to wear and how to prepare for running in the rain.
Yeah, this is a fun one. So, as you mentioned in the intro, rain can, it doesn't always mean you're not going to, run a fast time or reach your potential. A lot of it will depend on the temperature, right? And the wind. and obviously the distance of the race too. So for me, I've done a few races, you know, really of every distance in the rain. I've done a marathon, 5K, even a mile race on the track. So it's really, or 1500, I guess, outdoors. So it's really about figuring out, you know, how much, how's the rain going to impact you the most? And what are the things that are going to maybe potentially slow you down? Because sometimes when you're out there grinding, you're not even thinking about it, right? You're just out there trying to grind through, hold your pace, that sort of thing. The first thing though is going to be figuring out your attire, right? Like figuring out what are you going to wear? Because if it's colder, you might want to have something that has like, you know, sleeves on it, or windproof, that sort of thing, waterproof. I know Boston 20, was it 2018 for you? You know, we went out and made sure you had like rubber gloves to keep your hands warm, because it was super cold and rainy and windy. And so it will obviously depend on the temperature, and then just figuring out, you know, shoes, socks, that sort of thing. Blisters can become an issue the longer the race goes on, so you want to make sure that you you know, are starting the race with dry shoes as much as you can, and socks. And so you know, staying dry until the race begins, that's a big one as well. You know, staying under cover or having an umbrella handy is really good. What are some things that you think about when you check the weather and you see that it's going to be raining for a race?
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough because I'm someone who, I hate running in the rain. Like, it's just, it's not, some people like it, some people don't mind it. I really hate it. And I've done 23 marathons. Two of them have been 100% fully in the rain. And I think two others were half in the rain. And it is really tough, especially I think the starting line when it's a torrential right. downpour. And I think that's really only been the case at two or three of my marathons. But again, it's like, you know, everyone's going to be dealing with the same conditions. And I think when it comes to rain, right, and we'll go over this in the next question as well, when it comes to any race day forecast, we pretty much know what it's going to be the week before. I mean, we have an idea, right? And so I like people to look at what is the weather radar saying a week before, look at it, and you know, you see a rain cloud. I want everyone to picture what is the worst case scenario that day. And I think Boston 2018, that it did end up being worst case scenario, right? So I looked at it a week before. I was like, well, maybe it won't be that bad, right? But I did picture what worst case scenario would look like, and it ended up being worst case scenario. But really, the week out, I asked myself, do you still want to go through with this? What is that going to look like when you are running? And you really want to be realistic with yourself, and you want to set yourself up mentally to be out there, because physically, of course, yes, we have to prepare, you have to get all the things, but really mentally prepare for what it is like running in those conditions. And I think one of the things that helps with that is if in your armor of training over the last however many years you've been running, you have ran in bad conditions before, it does help you get an idea. So I like to, you know, when I see the weather forecast, okay, it looks like really bad. So before Boston 2018, it said, okay, it's going to be, you know, between 35, 40 degrees. It's going to be downpour. So I was like, that's really cold and that's wet. So have I ever ran in that before? There was maybe a handful of times where I ran in either that or like snow. So I kind of got an idea for what those days were like and how I felt and maybe like what I was wearing. And so really give yourself some time to reflect on the last time you ran in those conditions. Look at what the weather forecast is. When was the last time you ran in those conditions? Have you ever done a workout in those conditions? When you were running in those conditions, how did you feel? Were you overdressed? Were you underdressed? Ask yourself kind of all of those questions, and then you're going to get an idea for you as an individual how you want to approach what you wear to that race. Because I think that's the biggest question that people have is like, oh my gosh, what do I wear? And it's like, it's so individualized. No one is gonna have the right answer for you. The only person that really knows is yourself. And that's why it's really important to train in all of these conditions so that you know what you're comfortable wearing. Because what maybe, Jason, you're comfortable wearing in those conditions is completely different than what I'm comfortable wearing. And then you also have to ask yourself, how am I approaching this race? So in the Boston 2018 scenario, I was 5 months postpartum with my first child. I was not in the condition to be racing all out, like redlining a marathon. For me, it was more about like, okay, I'm gonna run it at an easy to moderate pace. try to finish. Because I had done minimal training leading up to the race. I think I started running in like January and then I had to run a marathon, right? So it's like, I was in a very different boat. So the apparel and the attire that I chose to wear that day might look a little bit conservative maybe to someone else that was out there. I'm really glad I wore what I wore. But I asked myself, okay, if you were running this at home as at this effort, what would you wear? And that's where I got my whole outfit. And I think that attire, it's a famous like picture that I've posted a million times. But I think when I first posted it on the Run for PR's account back in 2018, it got like 12,000 likes because it was like one of those iconic days. I don't know. But I had like rubber gloves on and like a raincoat and all of these things. And sometimes I will post it in my stories before Boston in April if it's ever raining or before a rainy race. I'll be like, hey, like, you know, you guys can do hard things. And people are like, should I wear rubber gloves? Should I wear a rain jacket? And most likely, no. I would say more often than not, when we approach these rainy races, it's not going to be the same conditions as Boston 2018. So that's why I really want to preface all of this by saying Boston 2018 was very weird weather. It's pretty rare that it's below 40 degrees and raining. If it is below 40 degrees and raining, yeah, I think we're going to want to do raincoat. We're going to want to do, you know, gloves that are waterproof, waterproof hat, all of those things. It becomes really, really important in temperatures below 50-ish that we're really avoiding hypothermia. And so that was really my main approach is I don't want to get wet and cold because that's the biggest concern when you're running in the rain in very cold temperatures. And it actually is dangerous, in my opinion, to run in those conditions. But as long as you continue running and you don't have to stop to walk, because what ends up happening is as soon as you stop running, your heart rate drops. And what happens when your heart rate drops, your body temperature drops, and it just becomes catastrophic. And I do remember after Boston 2015 and 2018, I very, very quickly crossing the finish line, it got very cold very fast and I was almost hypothermic both times. They had to like take me into like a warming shelter and it was scary to see everyone getting very, very cold. And so that's your biggest concern is what are you going to do in the race if you do have to stop? You really want to prepare yourself that like if something does flare up and you do have to start walking, you're probably gonna have to drop out, like most likely in those conditions. And that's why I think Boston 2018 had a really high dropout rate. I don't necessarily think that was because, you know, people didn't like the rain. I think it was like if you had to slow down for whatever reason, your heart rate dropped, you're getting hypothermic, your health is at risk. Like that's scary stuff. So moving on to better temperatures, right? So if it's above 50, 55, 60, and it's raining, really, it's almost gonna help you because it's like cooling you off, right? And I think grandma's one year, it rained at the start and it was like in the 60s for most of the race. But like you said, you don't really notice it as much when the weather isn't, you know, super cold because it's almost like cooling you off. It's like a benefit. And if you're running and it's like a drizzle, you're like you said, your mind is so occupied that you don't really notice it. So if you are racing in temperatures that are above like 50, 55, you might just get away with what you normally would have ran in anyways. But again, it's going to depend on the person. I think for Boston 2015, we both did that race and we both wore kind of different outfits maybe, or I wanted to maybe wear more than you did, and maybe I should have. And that's where things start to get dicey, is like in the 50s, because maybe you do want to go with a long sleeve in those conditions.
Yeah, so, you know, everything you said I was reflecting on, and yeah, Boston 2015 was like a typical year where it was not considered good weather, right? Like it was cold, rainy, windy. I think for that race, I wore pretty much what I would have worn in the same conditions without rain. So I had arm warmers on, I had gloves on. Now, if it wasn't rainy, maybe I would have taken that stuff off sooner had I warmed up. But because of the rain, I think I just like kept it on the whole time. But 2018 though, like you were just saying, worst case scenario, I don't think anyone could have even like visualize that mm-hmm. those sort of conditions until you were out there. Mm-hmm. And that's really the thing about that race, is it's so unique. The weather like that, you might get one day out of every like 10 years. But I think, you know, when you think about the attire, yeah, it's pretty important. But if you're saying, you know, like you said, above 55, above 60 degrees, I would probably wear what you would normally wear for a race in that temperature. The one thing I would add is maybe a hat to keep kind of the water out of your eyes a little bit, because it's just nice to be able to have that not be impacted as much. So the other thing too, thinking about rain, is like for the warm-ups, I've done a lot of like 5Ks and shorter races in the rain. So for me, it would just be important to have extra clothes. So I'd warm up in certain clothes, and then I would put on dry clothes right before the race. So that would just be something that I like to do. You know, whereas other times you might warm up with like your singlet and shorts on underneath something, and then you would just like strip down. But in this case, I would probably have extra clothes on hand.
Yeah, definitely good to have clothes at the start, especially if it starts raining at the start. You can always like have throwaways, right? So yeah, I think if it's above 55, you might get away with what you typically normally wear. But also keep in mind, you're probably going to chafe pretty bad given the rain situation. So what would you want to wear if it was a bad chafe day? So maybe you're someone that chafes really bad under your arms, and so maybe instead of wearing a tank top, maybe we consider like a t-shirt instead, to maybe just like aid in the friction. I just know that sometimes when it rains, maybe I chafe a little bit more in certain areas, like my thighs might chafe more in the rain, whereas if it's not raining at all, I wouldn't really get that chafing. So maybe we're wearing longer shorts to kind of avoid the skin on skin rubbing. Different things to think about, but also just mentally prepare that, like, yeah, it's probably gonna be tougher because you are gonna be chafing, so you're gonna have to think about that's gonna pop up, and just kind of be mentally prepared for when that does pop up in a race, how you're gonna feel, all those things. But yeah, it happens, and I don't really think it impacts finish times that much, to be honest. It's almost like it's better to be raining than it is to be hot. So diving into the next question, how to prepare for hot temperatures on race day. This is interesting. I think there's maybe like two approaches here. My big thing is, you know, if you're really concerned about this and you don't want to run a hot race, don't sign up for races where it could be hot. I think that's like generally a good rule of thumb, right? Like, no one wants to be training super hard for a race and then boom, surprised with the race day weather. So anytime you're going to be doing a race, you really want to be thinking about what part of the country is it in, and does it have the potential to be warm? So doing some research. I've been signed up for so many races over the years in different parts of the country, and sometimes learning the hard way that, like, hey, in February in California, it can be 75 degrees, right? And so if I would have done maybe some research ahead of time and like checked what the climate of that state looks like in February, is 75 a little bit warmer than usual? Yes. But if I were to look at what is the max temp in February in California, in that part of California, what is the min temp? It really gives you an idea, again, going back to what is worst case scenario. And so I always want people to think, be very conservative, think worst case scenario. So anytime that you want to run a race, find a race that you like, look up what is the minimum maximum temperature that month, that day, that part of the year for where you're going, and look at what that max temp is, and then ask yourself, would I want to run a marathon if it was that hot, middle of the day? If the answer is no, maybe we find a different race, right? So it's all about just planning ahead. And I had one person years ago comment on one of my posts, because I ran 4 marathons that year. All of them were between 60 and 80 degrees, and I kind of was complaining about that. And he was like, well, why don't you just not sign up for marathons where it could potentially be hot? And I was like, hey, that's kind of like, that's like a jab, you know? But in all reality, there are races out there that exist, several, where it's just really the likelihood of you running in above 65 degrees is pretty much zero. And there are some races out there where it's like, you know, you're more likely to be running in snow than in warm temperatures. And so I think it's really good just to like think ahead and look at those things when signing up for a race. But if you are here, right, maybe you're looking at the forecast 7 days away, you see it's going to be hot. Again, doing the same thing you did with the rain race, think back to all the workouts you've done in the heat. How did you feel? And realize that's how you're going to feel on race day. And that's the conditions that you're going to be facing. And what are some things that helped you in those workouts? What are some feelings that you had? What are some things you wish you would have done? And then just use that as knowledge going into your race, right? So if you didn't hit your paces and you went a lot slower than you normally do, that's probably how the race is going to go. So maybe just like prepare yourself, hey, I need to slow down by this much. I'm probably not going to feel great because it's going to be warm. I'm going to need to hydrate more. It's going to feel a lot harder. All of these things are really good to mentally prepare, especially if you're a week out. With that being said, you can also opt to like not do that race, right? Like if you're a week out, you can still pivot and maybe like find a different race that's not hot. So it really just depends on like your stance, your goals, what you're trying to get out of it. But if you're someone that's like, I'm really trying to like run a BQ time and I just spent 16 weeks training and it's gonna be 80 degrees in my race, I would always say don't do it. I would always look for a different race just because you're not going to be able to run to your potential in a race where it's above like 66 and sunny. It's gonna be really, really difficult and your time is going to be impacted. So if you're already on the cusp, like let's say you're 325 fitness, you want to run sub 330, you've never done that before, and you see that your race is going to be 68 to 75 degrees, I'd say, hey, is there another race that maybe you could be doing in the next 2 to 4 weeks that would be better weather? Like, is there a different race that weekend in a different part of the country? Are you willing to make those adjustments, make those changes? Does it make sense?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of good things there about, you know, being strategic about choosing the races if you're trying to for a certain performance time, right, or goal. But like you said, it is more difficult in the week leading up to it if this is your, you know, your only option to race, or you committed to doing this 5K race or 10K race, whatever it is, and just going through with it. How do you prepare for it if all of a sudden it's warmer than it has been in training? And that can be the difficult thing, right? And so obviously, we want to do as much as we can during the warmer tight time of the year to train for potentially a warm race. So it's being selective about the times of day, the time of day that you're running. You know, if the race is in the morning and you're typically a night runner, maybe you want to wake up and do some morning runs just to prepare and know what it's like to run in maybe the high humidity that you might have to deal with in the race. I know here in Minnesota, we had really humid races in like late May, early June. And you know, they were always so hard because we weren't quite used to the humidity yet. And so that was one for me. I had to just really adjust the mental approach to the race, right? And then just pacing, like going out way slower to make sure I feel good. Because otherwise you feel really lethargic if you like go out at goal pace right away. The other thing too is like, the sweat rate increases a ton. So making sure you mention the hydration, making sure you're getting extra sodium in that day or two leading up to the race and even the morning of. You know, we didn't mention this, but about the chafing, that's an issue in the heat too, in the humid temps. So making sure you have the Body Glide on, the nip coverings, whatever you need, and you can use that for the rain as well. But yeah, I mean, there's some other things I've done over the years that have been really like targeted, like for example, going in the sauna before a run, or choosing to run inside on the treadmill at a gym where it's like really warm, that sort of thing. I think, you know, we knew it was going to be kind of warmer at LA that year that we went. We didn't know it was going to be that hot. So I think we did do a lot of indoor runs because it was winter, right? So it's warmer inside. And so you're better off being in the warmer environment, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, two factors, right? If you're having a spring race and you come from a cold climate, it is difficult to get the heat training, but I like how you said using the resources you have available. So doing the sauna, making sure that your body is heat acclimated. One thing that I do in the winter to prepare for hot races is heated yoga throughout the winter twice a week. And so that's almost done in like sauna-like conditions. It's very, very hot. It gets over probably 100 degrees in the room for an hour twice a week. And so doing that allows my body to be exposed to hot environments during a very cold time of year because there is no other place where I'd really be able to get that heat exposure while also doing activity in the winter. Not really anything I can think of. And then, like you said, the treadmill, I think, can be a good tool, but again, it's not it's not gonna be super hot on a treadmill, but it is a little bit warmer obviously than going out and running in 20 degree snow. But I do think it can help you prepare for potentially warm days. I did a lot of heated yoga before I did an April marathon in Las Vegas in the desert, and it was pretty warm, and I had absolutely no hot runs leading up to that race, but I still performed pretty well, and I actually felt pretty good. But I attribute a lot of that to the heated yoga, like the sauna type work. So I do think that that can really help, but you have to be consistent with it, and you really have to be dedicated to going regularly and making it a part of your routine. It's also not something that you can just like throw in like 2 weeks before your race. I think it's something you have to do pretty consistently for several weeks in order to get the benefits there. Yeah, so moving on to the next question, how to fit Orange Theory classes into your running plan, like the pros and cons of Orange Theory. So I think before we talk about Orange Theory, for those of you maybe who don't know who it is, I've actually never taken a class, but I have been, you know, explained kind of the whole concept of Orange Theory several times. From what I am aware of, it can be a pretty competitive environment. I mean, obviously, it's kind of like you set your own pace, but when they have the screens up there, they're showing everyone's heart rates, that sort of thing. And whenever you're in a group fitness class, we really have to go with, that is a competitive environment. I don't care if it's a spin class, a bar class. If you're in a group fitness class, it's competitive. So in addition to that, they also have like kind of a number thing they put up on the screen. And you're doing it in front of other people. So it's like running, weights, that sort of thing. And the idea of the class is it's a high intensity interval class. So it is a high intensity class. We are not working zone two. This is a workout, right? This is a really intense workout. And I think there's been a lot of flack that Orange Theory has gotten over the last couple of years because people have come out saying, you know, I did Orange Theory 6 times a week, and that's what they really advertise you to do, is like go several times a week because it's like an unlimited pass sometimes, right? I did it 6 days a week. I got really burnt out, that sort of thing, because it is a high intensity class. So even if you are someone that's only doing Orange Theory, let's say you're not running at all, let's say you're just someone who really likes Orange Theory, you probably shouldn't be doing that 6 days a week, probably not even five, because you do need to, like we've talked about in previous episodes, you have to have recovery days in between these high intensity workouts. You can't do HIIT workouts sprinting every single day. Eventually your body's gonna be like, hey, I need a break. Like, this is way too intense. It's too much. It's like going too fast on all of your runs all the time. It's too much. Your body does need to have recovery days. So if you are going to Orange Theory, you know, 6 days a week, I would maybe polarize that. Like, okay, on Mondays and Thursdays, I'm going to push myself like really, really hard. But on all the other days, I'm just going to go through the motions. But I think we really have to evaluate, am I able to do that? Because you're in a group class environment. And I've been in a lot of group fitness classes over the years, and it is really, really hard to scale it down and like go easy, because I think it's so easy to get caught up in like the music, what everyone else is doing, and once you kind of get warmed up, you're like, oh, whatever, I feel great. And then kind of like mistakes will be made, right?
Yeah. Well, you did a great job, just overview of what Orange Theory is. And I've had some athletes that have done similar like boot camp coaching classes at their local gym, and I know Lifetime has a few as well that we've been to. But, you know, for each athlete, there's a few things. You know, I've worked with probably close to 10 athletes that have done Orange Theory or want to continue doing it when we work together. And so how we structure it into the plan is maybe different for each athlete. It'll depend on where they're at within their training cycle, what their goal races are, and the distance of the races, you know, that sort of thing. How many days a week are they taking it? I've been able to, during like a half or a full marathon training cycle, for most of those people I've worked with, I've been able to convince them to drop down to just 1 day a week of Orange Theory during their cycle, or potentially quit altogether during the training cycle and then pick it back up in the off season. So I think that that's the best method for, if you're really going after like a performance goal in a half or a full, if you drop down to 1 day a week, that allows you to still get another day of like a pretty good workout that's going to be a little bit more specific to the marathon. So it's going to be more of like a threshold or steady state workout, plus your long run. And then you still have the high intensity day, which will get you that little bit of speed. And as you approach your race, you're going to want to be mindful of that and maybe back off a bit. But for people that are maybe training just for general fitness, or they're wanting to maybe improve their speed, 5K, that sort of thing, again, you can continue doing Orange Theory, but if you're doing it twice a week, for example, that doesn't leave us much room to have like a quality running workout as well. You might be able to squeeze in one more, and that will give you 3 days of pretty much quality and 1 day or 4 days of you know, easy recovery or whatever. And so you have to really be mindful of that too. I think it's just all about what you're hoping to get out of the experience. I know most people that go to those, they either really just enjoy the challenge, maybe the fact that it's structured and it's like at the set time, they know they're going to get their workout in. So that accountability feature, right, where they're getting a workout in. And then for some, it might be just, yeah, that motivating factor to knock out their strength and their speed in one session, right? So, but if you are okay with not doing it that way, and maybe trying a different direction, like doing specific strength work, specific speed work, that'd be great too. And I think that it's totally fine to do Orange Theory, especially during like an off season or a period where you're just trying to kind of maintain fitness or slightly gain, when you don't have like running related goals on the horizon.
Yeah, I think it's really good to define your goals. I like how you did a good job explaining, you know, every situation is unique and different. And I think it's really good as an individual to just sit down and like ask yourself, what are your goals, right? Are you really gung-ho? Like, do you really want to reach your potential in the sport of running? Like, are you someone that I really want to get down to like low threes in the marathon or something? And that level of like goal might require a different level of like strictness with what you allow yourself to do outside of running. I know that's maybe not like the super popular answer, but sometimes people want to know like what do I need to like to take to get to this next level, or some guys really want to like break three, whatever it might be. And it's like, well, we really, I mean, at that point it does kind of get a little like stingy. Like, we do have to really look at where are you really spending a lot of your energy, because putting your body through a training regimen where you're trying to reach your potential in the marathon and really get every second, every minute out of your potential and just squeezing yourself that much, it does require you to really look at like, where are we spending our time and energy? Sometimes we do have to do like a little bit of a deeper dive. So it really just depends on like how, you know, crazy you want to be with like chasing your goals, right? For some people, they're just like, I just want to do the race. I really like Orange Theory. I still want to keep doing it. And so it's always about finding that balance for you. Back in like 2014, I was really into fitness classes at the gym, and I would do a lot of these like boot camp classes. So I think it was a little bit before Orange Theory became popular, but I go to Lifetime Fitness. I'm still a Lifetime Fitness member. I love going to the gym. But I used to take these group fitness classes probably 4 times a week. I loved them. I absolutely loved going to these boot camp classes. I felt so strong. They were really fun. And it was just a great way to kind of like schedule in my workouts. Like, I knew, okay, after work, I'm going to go and I'm going to do this boot camp class. And on Saturday, oh, there's a class at this time and it's going to work really well, because I liked the motivation of just showing up. And then everyone there was just kind of getting me jacked up. Like, and there was music and there was an instructor. It was like, I didn't even need to think. I didn't need to really motivate myself that much. I just needed to go in. And what ended up happening over that course that is, at the same time, I also was training maybe for marathons and kind of getting more into running. And eventually I like hit this crossroads where, like I did marathons while doing that regimen of like doing these boot camp classes, and I was trying to juggle both of them. And I kept saying, yeah, my goal is to qualify for Boston. But every time I would kind of get into a training cycle, I would continue to go to my boot camp classes 3 to 4 times a week. Running wasn't really a huge priority. Obviously I was still running a lot. I was running like 40 miles a week, but it was very, not like frantic, but it was kind of like I was trying to stretch the limits of what I could do. And what ended up happening is I was being compromised on both sides, right? So I wasn't really getting any strength gains from the boot camp classes. I wasn't getting any better there. And my running really was hitting a plateau as well. I think I ran in the 3:45s like 4 times in a row before I was like, okay, I wonder what would happen if I really limited these boot camp classes to maybe like once a week, or I just stopped going altogether for couple months and I just like went ham on my running, because I think I have a little bit more energy here. If I just really like exuded that same amount of energy that I give in those boot camp classes to like these hard running workouts, would I be able to run a Boston qualified time? So it was like this curiosity in me kind of got me to that next push of, okay, maybe I need to make a few changes. And then I think over time, I just kind of slowly weeded myself out of taking those classes because my running goals did kind of take over. And I was like, I really want to see what is my potential in the sport of running. But now I'm at a place where I'm like, oh, you know, it is kind of fun to go to some of those gym classes. And being able to be realistic with myself of like, okay, is running a top priority right now, or can I add in some of these classes? And I think it's really good to find that balance, but also being realistic of there is only so much you can do. And I hate the myth of like, oh, you can balance it all. Like you can do it all. You really can't. And so you really want to make sure that you're being honest with yourself of what it is that you really want to do. And that might be different from what someone else wants to do. So setting down, addressing your goals, and just kind of being open and honest with that and with yourself, and remembering that our energy is limited. And so just keeping that in mind when we're coming up with a training plan or setting goals for ourselves.
Yeah, that was really well said. You know, it's, we can't be working hard or super hard every single day. And, you know, if you don't have running related goals in the near future and you're okay with running easy, then I think doing Orange Theory twice a week, whatever, is fine. But even getting above, like, I think three times a week would be like the max you would want to go to that because it is so intense. And I know that there's, you know, they target maybe different muscle groups or the speed workouts might look a little bit different each time. And just thinking of like when I coach a few athletes, some of the changes, some of the ways we would work around these classes would be, you know, to get them extra mileage, we'd maybe do a warm up before the class, or I'd make sure there would be at least like an easy day in between like a workout and an Orange Theory day. So I would never do like a back-to-back thing with Orange Theory and a workout. And you have to really be careful doing a long run too the day after that if you're not used to it, that sort of thing. So it's just, it's about just being, you know, being flexible with the schedule and making adjustments as needed. Like if you feel like you're more sore, you're not recovered, that sort of thing. And then just slowly progressing. You have to be very careful with the progressive overload in general for any runner, but especially if you're doing these classes on top of your training.
Definitely. And yeah, Orange Theory I know is pretty expensive, right? And it is like a whole separate gym. So definitely things to think about. I know at Lifetime, obviously it's expensive to have a gym membership there as well, but the group classes are kind of included in your membership for the most part. And I've found some classes over the years are really good and they help like aid runners a little bit more in like the recovery process, and maybe they're not as intense. And so if you're someone that really just likes the group class setting, or maybe you like to take classes with friends or whatever it may be, there might be better options. Cause I know for me, it was like, I just liked going to these classes, even though it's like I didn't need the high intensity workout. I just wanted to go to the class to have that group fitness. And so I found that like a lot of the yoga classes were maybe a little bit better because I wasn't getting my heart rate super elevated. I was working on mobility and flexibility, which is something that I was lacking in a lot of my other areas. And so it was a good recovery activity for me. And I still like to go to the yoga classes. And so really just thinking about what is the best way that I can frame up group fitness around what my running goals are, or vice versa. Maybe group fitness is more important and your running goals come second. Just finding out what works for you. So the last question that I get sometimes pretty frequently on social media is, how do you run so many miles? And so I think this is always an interesting question. I think it kind of stems from like more of like a curiosity perspective, right? Because it may be, I'm sure it does maybe look extreme to some people, like, hey, how can you run like 7-8 miles a day? Or how does someone like run 50-60 miles a week? And I follow people on Strava, like even Brianna Staracki right now, she's training for Grandma's Marathon. I'm sure by the time we release this, she'll already have ran it, but it's like she's running 100 mile weeks. And so I always look at Elite's training and I'm like, wow, that's like, how are you running so much? Or even the flip of that, sometimes I follow on social media, I'll see like CrossFit people, like these women who are really into CrossFit, and I see how much they're lifting. And my brain, I can't even like wrap my head around like how much weight they're throwing around, because they look like, you know, they look just like a regular person. We kind of have the same build, but they're just like lifting these crazy amounts of weights. And really what it boils down to, I think, is just the athlete background, like how many years that person had to train and do the foundational work And it really is more of a testament when I see those people lifting at CrossFit doing these crazy lifts. It's like they've done so much foundational work to build their strength. And then it's really more showing that, hey, this is just something that they've committed to over the course of a really long time. And I truly believe that if anyone, like if I were to tomorrow quit running and just be like, I'm all in on CrossFit, if you were to come back, look at me in 5 to 10 years, it would probably be lifting the same amount of weights. I mean, potentially, right, as some of these people that are doing the same thing. Right. And I think it really boils down to, where are you putting your time and energy? And that's kind of like where the results will show. And I think even 10, 12, 15 years ago, if you would have showed me, hey, this is like what your workout regimen is going to look like when you're 31, 32 years old, I would have been like, no, it's not. That's insane. It doesn't make any sense. But what ends up happening is the progressive overload over time, really, it can build you up to this load that maybe to the former you seems impossible. Right. But when you build up to that level, it just kind of becomes your new normal. And so that's why I think it's interesting to look at other people on social media, because you're like, wow, that's really cool. Like, that's what you could do if you just commit, you know, a decade or 5 years, whatever, to a certain sport, at, you know, even at a recreational level, what it could look like. But I do think being smart about it, right? So if, let's say I was to quit tomorrow and go to do a CrossFit class, we want to start with where we're at right now. Like, I would probably barely be able to lift the bar for a lot of those lifts, and you'd have to really be progressive and slow about it. And maybe that first year, it wouldn't really seem like making a lot of progress, but really years of training compound on top of each other over time. And so if you just get used to doing the same thing over time, maybe the first year that you're into running, you're running 10 miles a week. Then the next year you're running 15 miles a week. Then year three, you're up to 20. But you doubled in 2 years. Then year four, you're up to 25. Year five, you're up to 30, maybe. I don't know. Year six, 35. Year seven, you're at 45. Year eight, boom, 50. And then it just kind of hangs out there. But if you're looking at someone's year 10 and they're at like 50, 55 miles a week consistently, and you're in year two at your 15 miles a week, you might think, how's that even possible? But if you just kind of hang tight and continue doing process focused things, you might realize that in a few years you'll kind of be in a different spot. But I think a lot of it just boils down to where you are putting a lot of your time. And so I think that's really more what people are seeing, is just like where I'm maybe focusing some of my time. And other things that obviously help me be able to run more miles is going slow enough on my easy days. So I do spend a lot of my time going probably 3 to 4 minutes slower than marathon pace on my easy runs. I also enjoy running. So that's another thing, right? Some people just don't like to run that much. They only want to run a few days a week. So these are all things to think about when we're trying to figure out, okay, what do I want my training to look like? Or how do I want to see myself in 10 years? A lot of people don't really have the desire to run that many days a week. Like, I don't have the desire to do CrossFit 5 days a week, but some people have that desire and they just really love it. And it helps them in more ways than anything else. And so getting out in nature, all of those things, is kind of my fix for running. Other people get their fixes doing other things. Like, maybe you're someone that goes on a lot of hikes, and so maybe your running might look a little bit different. But I think, I don't know if that really answers the question.
I think you answered it very well. You know, I don't have a ton to add, but really, you're talking about all these people that are at such a high level within their sport. And what it boils down to is they've had passion and they've had commitment over years of working hard, right? And so, you know, they get to this level where it's like they need to, well, first of all, the level they're at is probably you know, it's sustainable for them because they've built up to it, right? So it's not like looking up a mountain that you've never climbed before, right? It's like, oh, they've done this before, so they're just repeating it, right? Year after year, week after week, the same load or whatever, and then eventually, you know, they have to make those increases too along the way to reach a new fitness level. And that's the thing about elite running too, is you see, you know, sometimes elites can plateau for 3 years, 4 years, and then they finally reach a breakthrough, right, or whatnot. And so sometimes it's just kind of cracking the code a little bit, like figuring out what are they missing? Do they need to increase their mileage a little bit, or maybe come back down and try something else? But yeah, everyone that's running such high mileage, I think it's something they've worked up to, you know, it's taken a decade probably to get there. And the consistent training, not just year after year, but just throughout the entire year. So limiting their time off to a week, you know, after a race, that sort of thing, getting back on the horse. We have a lot of runners that maybe come to us throughout the year that they haven't ran for 3 months or whatever since their last marathon ended. They took time off, that sort of thing. So it can be difficult if you're taking long breaks as well. So keep that in mind. You know, think about just like you, I think you mentioned that laying the foundation, that that really stuck with me. That's the most important piece, I think, is continuing to just build on that year after year.
Yeah, I think that brings up, a good point is some of those people in the CrossFit gym or even myself, like with my running, maybe there's not a lot of extended breaks going on. And sometimes I see people with their running, it's like, there's just hardly any breaks, right? And we want to think, you know, there's pros and cons, right? I think there's always, you always want to be taking like off seasons and stuff, but I think the more years you can like string together of relative consistency, that's going to really propel you in the right direction. And I think it is really difficult. Like I've tried to get into lifting weights or incorporating other things like yoga, and it is really difficult to commit to something and not take breaks, because once you kind of do it for, I don't know, couple months, it kind of like loses its flair and you're like, I'll just take a break. And it's really hard to kind of get back into that, because like once you're out of the routine, it just becomes challenging. And I think these are things that a lot of people struggle with, and just trying to figure out what is the most sustainable approach for you, and maybe are there other things that you could cut or you want to cut out to make more time for the activities that you are trying to prioritize. So if I did want to make yoga a more consistent part of my training regimen, I probably would have to run less. And so it's all about defining what your goals are. So if my goals were, hey, I really want to like hit these poses in yoga and like be able to go to 4 classes a week and be able to really work on my flexibility, I would have to really be honest with myself, take a look in the mirror and be like, well, you probably need to cut back your mileage quite a bit, because you can't be sore. You need to have enough time to make it to the class. You need to have more energy available to you. Well, how can I get more energy? I'm already optimizing my sleep. My diet's already really good. You got to cut back. And so it's all about juggling what your goals are and how to kind of make it a priority in your life, definitely. Really good questions. So a lot of these things are really personal, and we're always like, well, it depends, right? It's all about like your own circumstance, and everyone should train based on their unique situation, their unique goals, circumstances, all of those things. And that's why we love coaching, because we can really get to know you as an individual, what your goals are, and help you achieve those goals and come up with a plan for success for you and really individualize things for you. So if that's something you're interested in, we get you set up with a free 7-day trial working with a coach. So you can fill out our form at www.run4prs.com. Even get a free phone consultation with your coach. Again, that's www.run4prs.com for a free 7-day trial working with a coach. Thanks for tuning in.